Thank you, all of you, for showing up here tonight. It's really a pleasure to be back here. So I like to introduce you to the Nine Contemplations of Death. Yeah, it's a meditation practice with deep roots in Tibetan Buddhism. This practice is traditionally attributed to Atisha, an 11th century Tibetan Indian master. And I'm really also happy actually to see some of your faces here who just did with me 2 weeks ago a whole weekend retreat on the Nine Contemplations of Death. And it's really surprising also to see you back here because you just recently done the whole thing, a whole weekend. And it seems to be beneficial. Yeah, I wonder if it will be for all of us tonight. So, welcome. You're really invited to move also in front of the screen if you feel like sitting is too much. It, like George said, it's an intense topic. If you feel like something is overwhelming, you're really so invited to move around, to move your body, to look out of the window, to drink some water, and really take it lightly. And just take in how much is valuable for you. And also just take from my words only what really fits for you. Like you're so much invited also to just set aside what doesn't resonate. So starting here all together, I really wouldn't want to invite this common room we are in here. Even though we are separated in all these little screens on the computer, it's really an invitation to kind of maybe you could imagine little strings going from your heart or little channels reaching out to all those other, I don't know how many people here, more than 90, I think. And just really having a sense of being not alone here. Yeah. And I like you to choose one person on the screen and to look into their eyes. It's not like the same as if we would be like physical in the same room, but I just like to introduce this little exercise and really choose one person here on the screen. And even if it's just a name without a picture on. You could imagine a person sitting there or laying there, standing there, and just repeat mentally this phrase for you. You want to be happy, just like me. Yeah. This person wants to be happy, just like me. This person does the best to live his or her life, just like me. This person is sometimes experiencing joy, anger, fear, just like me. And this person is going to die, just like me. This person is wanting to be happy, just like me. And this person is going to die, just like me. And it's a really powerful practice, even for everyday life. And I just like to put that at the beginning because I feel it's so worth practicing it and then introducing it in your life. When you greet or hug someone, you can be really aware of the preciousness of that moment. And you remind yourself, I will die. You will die. We only have this one precious moment together because we really never know when we will be with another person again. Yeah. And maybe you even find someone who can maintain like three deep breaths with you, like while you're hugging. And you could really say, like, ah, I'm going to die. You are going to die. We only have this one precious moment together. So tonight we dedicate our time, our attention to death, yeah? And it's an invitation to bring death into life. In Buddhism, death is not seen as an enemy. It's really seen as an invitation to love, to appreciate, and to be grateful. Yeah, the Buddha really emphasized the importance of being aware of our own mortality. And there are some sutras where he talks about this. One is the Maranasati Sutta and the Mindfulness of Death Sutra. And he says there, mindfulness of death, when developed and cultivated, is of great benefit and great gain. It finds firm support in the deathless and has the deathless at its ultimate goal. Yeah, and with deathless, it's like this space which is free of suffering, this space where we are free. Therefore, you should develop mindfulness of death. Yeah. So he's really clear there. And in the sutra, he's asked, like, how often should one, or he asked his disciples actually, how often should one contemplate death? And at the end of the sutra, he says, one should keep it in one consciousness every moment. Yeah. So what he means by that is what he's pointing to is that we can see every moment as our last moment. Yeah. And if we really take this in, yeah, to really make this our practice, we wouldn't harm each other. It's really a path to freedom to contemplate on death and to live also from that space that every moment could be our last moment. Yeah, and we all know on a cognitive level that we are going to die, but we don't live like that. We deny our own death and we deny the death of people around us. Yeah. I mean, how often have I had an little argument on like not the most friendly contact with one of my children or my partner when they move out of house? And in fact, we don't know if we see each other again. So if I have that more on my mind, like how do I want to live at this moment? So our unconsciousness tells us that we have enough time to live, yeah, to do what we actually want to do. And to give in this world what we want to give in this world. But in fact, we do have limited time and we don't know how long that is. And this practice is not to depress you, it's really about appreciation, yeah. Reflecting impermanence, reflecting death, also the little death, like the last time you've been with a friend, the last day of your child in school, the last sunshines of the day, the last time you've been in a relationship, yeah. The little deaths. It's an invitation to look how we can use our life as good as we can. How we live in a life in a way that at the end of our days that we don't regret. Yeah. So these teachings, they and the nine contemplations of death, they can really emphasize in us what we want to give in this world. How do I want to stand in this world? How do I really, really want to live my life? Yeah. And give us more energy to live from a place where I want to live from. Buddha was quite radical there. Yeah. He really asked us to go for the truth and meet the truth with clarity and love. And he said, if we do this, we find liberation. Yeah. And liberation means we are not stuck into our habitual habits of causing pain to others, to ourselves. And he himself, he discovered fundamental truths like that everything is impermanent, yeah, that nothing contains an independent self, and that this everything is like dissatisfaction. Yeah, it's part of our life. All conditioned things are ultimately unsatisfactory. Because they are subject to change. Nothing stays there forever. And this is kind of his main teachings, all of this. Yeah. And he said, recognizing these three characteristics is a key to liberation, is a key to be love. Because we don't practice to become good meditators. We really practice to love. It's about love. Yeah. And Buddha came on this path also through realizing that death is unavoidable. Because when he lived in his home and he insisted on moving his house and go out to the world, he met an old person, a sick person, and he saw a corpse on the field or somewhere there in the town. And he had this really this first kind of waking up. This is unavoidable. And I think when we are confronted with the death, we have this tendency to kind of t look away, to push it away. I remember one time in India, I was walking along the streets and there was a corpse laying in a busy city in the middle of the street and nobody was looking. And I don't know what, like all passed by, all the people, many, many people in India. And I don't know what was going on for them, but I could imagine. And there had been times in my life where I would look at this person and just quickly look away and not make it like a way of waking up. Oh, this is unavoidable. This is going to happen to me. Yeah. So we contemplate death because it is true. Everything which is born dies. Yeah. And there's a freedom in it when we come into harmony with what is true. Yeah. But we need to dare to come into harmony with it. And then we can experience this freedom. And it's not from a conceptual idea, it's really from experiencing truth and experiencing deeply from within. Yeah, this is impermanent. This is going to die. And that this is freeing the heart and the mind from clinging when we realize this truth. So this teachings of the Buddha, they confront us deeply. Yeah, impermanence is like if we deeply dive into it, if we really take his advice to contemplate on advice to contemplate on death, it's confronting. They confront our deepest delusions, yeah, that we are a permanent self, that this body will just stay as it is, and that we and the world is how it is, how we see it. Yeah, but they also give us comfort, these teachings, and that's what we are kind of inviting also. Yeah, if we wouldn't get comfort through this teaching, we wouldn't stay with our meditation practice. So being in touch with what is true, yeah, really experiencing truth from within, there's some comfort there. Yeah, even though it's painful. So we need both in our practice, yeah, enough comfort to keep me going on the path and to give like a base to me, yeah, with all the challenging stuff which is rising up. And also like yeah, challenging us to grow. So in this Mahaparinibbana Sutta, one of the teachings, this is the teachings where the last days of Buddha are described, and where actually it's describing his death and also the last words he was saying. And I read you some of these last words, and I think it's quite, it gives me another sense of, wow, this super wise man, like who really realized to love unconditionally. Yeah? These are the last words he spoke. It's like not the very, very last, I don't know what that was, but it's among the last words he spoke to his disciples, which were surrounding him. So he said, "The Dharma and the Vinaya, which is the ethical conduct that I have taught, will be your teacher after I'm gone. Take refuge in yourself and in the Dharma. Seek no other refuge." Yeah. And that doesn't mean that we can't be like live another religion and that we can't dance wildly or live a really fun life or have different partners, live sexuality, like all this, it doesn't mean, yeah. It means we can take refuge in the middle of all circumstances. Yeah, and there lies so much freedom if we are not dependent on the circumstances. And you might have people in your mind, like those connected to their essence, that can endure really life's hardship, like really heavy duty pain without breaking. Yeah. And he said, "All conditional things are impermanent. How could it be otherwise than to pass away? Be diligent, be mindful, be untiring." Among his last words. And he said, among his last words in this world, yeah, "All formed things are subject to decay. Strive diligently and mindfully." So it's such a strong invitation among these last words to really make impermanence a practice for us, to really look deeply into an impermanence, yeah. And so we are ignoring often that we are going to die. And we think that's going to protect us, but in fact, it keeps us from living fully. Like it keeps us from living our full potential of love. Yeah. And we are fine with things which are ending when we don't like them. But how is it about ending of things that we love? Yeah. It's not easy for us. So how can this contemplation of death support freedom? Yes, can really, when we dive into the nine contemplation of death meditation, well, we'll guide you through soon. It really can help to see where are we clinging? Yeah, during this meditation, it's meditation slash contemplation. Really be aware of your responses to the nine points. Yeah, where is clinging? Where are you clinging to strategies? Where am I not free? Yeah, what is moving inside? And this can motivate us to live in alignment with my deeper values, yeah? Living with integrity. And it's really clear that our bodies will die, but how we live our lives has an effect on this world, has an effect of other on other people who might still be living, yeah. So this again can just give us like this little push, like how do we want to be in this world, yeah? And it's not easy to do this in our society, to be so true with impermanence, because our society is really doing best to push it away. I mean, all the products in the supermarket which tell us to be younger and to be different than we are and to look better. It's like kind of all the time denying that we just will get wrinkles, yeah. And there's also like a business made from everything. If you walk through the mall in the city, you can buy all stuff, but in fact, you can't buy balloons saying happy death or a shop around equipment with the death articles for dying people. Like this is hidden behind gray curtains, kind of outside of the city mall. Yeah, and this is strong. Death is among our three biggest fears we have. Yeah, we have this fear, like the worrying about something that has already happened. We are worrying about that going on in our mind. We have fear of things which could happen, which haven't happened yet. And the third biggest fear people have is the fear of death. Yeah. Because I think our bodies are so close and precious to us. And yet, one day we must be separate from them. And can we do something to prepare us? And in the Buddhist teaching, it said, yes, we can. We can meditate. We can practice a clear mind. Yeah. And we don't know if something like from this mind we will take in another life. Yeah, we don't know. Like the Buddha hasn't said much about that. But some people do believe. Yeah? So the more we can open up to death now, the more our fear around this can transcend. So one point I want to highlight before we dive into this contemplation is the beauty of death. Yeah, what about taking new perspectives on death? Yeah, and one could be, how would it be if we lived forever? Just imagine. If everything would stay forever, how would that be? And a second perspective we can take here is death is an equal maker. Yeah? It's destroying artificial borders between races, religions, castes. And we will all be earth one day, air, water. And what I have already said and put out here is that we can like be grateful that there is something like death as a teacher in our life, So we can look into what is really important. Yeah. We can pause, we can reflect, live from this place we really want to come from. And another new perspective I want to invite is, may it be that death can show us the beauty and preciousness of a person. You might have had this experience that someone died, and after you start to see their beautiful qualities, which you might have not been in contact so much while this person was still alive. Yeah. I just met a friend of mine today, and he said to me, "Oh, since my mother died, I have such a better relation. My relationship to her is so much better." It really touched me. Since his mother died, his relationship to her is so much better. And our relationships to our loved ones, they don't only exist when we are with them together. And we don't need to be in the same room. I'm sure we all have loved ones who are not with us in the same room, who are maybe far away in this world, and we are in relationship, yeah, beyond space, beyond. Yeah, there's so much more about love and connection and relationship than just hanging out together. Yeah, and maybe love and connection goes beyond. We are wild, we are mysterious, yeah, we don't know. You might find during this contemplation the tendencies to go into patterns of clinging, yeah, to cling also towards ideas you might have about impermanence and death. And I really invite you to allow yourself to have your own journey with impermanence, with dying, yeah, with this subject. Allow yourself to be curious and open to what arises in your awareness in each moment during that meditation. And there's a really delicate point where we have a choice. Yeah. And this is the last thing I want to point out before we start diving into this. Yeah? There's a really delicate point where we have a choice, the choice between being pulled into the habitual patterns of difficulties and old stories, yeah, and pain, or to remain outside. And it's subtle and not easy, especially with fear and grief and stress. And we already know, we know the grooves of our mind, yeah, we know the pathways our habitual patterns are grooving in our mind. So what about making a decision, not going in it, but staying awake? And what it really can support you here is movement, like movement with your hands or humming. So this is what I want to invite you to do during this meditation. When you feel like you're diving into a habitual stream, like, yeah, putting grief on grief, putting extra fear on fear. Yeah. What about staying outside through movement, through humming, having your awareness there? So, dear ones, lots of talking finally. And it's more really like a contemplative practice. So, more talking than stillness tonight, while I invite you now to take your seat, to take your posture. You're absolutely invited to lay down, also to stand up, to move even. Yeah. What supports you most to be there? What supports you most to be present? And maybe you want to sigh at the beginning and really feel this silence in which all these words I've spoken fall. Yeah. You could also shake your body at the beginning if that helps you to enter a different space. Yeah. Just get yourself comfortable. And be clear, you're diving into this meditation of the nine contemplation of death from 11th century Tibetan Indian master, cultivated in Tibetan Buddhism. And make sure you're really good with arriving here. Yeah? What else do you need? Sighing, yawning, making sounds, it's all invited. Yeah, shaking your body, shaking all these words kind of off your body. Opening your mouth maybe once wide, making funny faces. To really enter physically, yeah, with yourselves into the space of silence, which is around this body, which is in this body. Silence everywhere, otherwise we wouldn't be able to hear these words, yeah, to feel these feelings and sensations. It's all held by immense space and silence. Well, make sounds, sigh, yawn, yell if you need to dive into the silence. Maybe allowing the exhalation to become even longer. And allowing the body to sink into the space behind the exhalation. Ah. Ah. Tuning towards that silence in the space behind the exhalation. And the first three contemplations are the inevitability of death. These nine contemplations are divided into three parts, and each part has three points. And the first is the inevitability of death. Yeah, we plan so many activities and projects for the coming days, months, years. Yeah, and death is the one event that will certainly occur. But we don't usually think about it or plan for it. Even though when the thought of death enters our mind, we usually push it away. Consider the following three points to develop a sense that death will definitely occur. And the first point to consider. Everyone must die. Yeah. And to develop the awareness that death is for sure, it will definitely happen. You can remember people from the past. Yeah, famous rulers, writers, musicians, philosophers, scientists, ordinary people. Saints. Yeah, remember people who've once lived on this earth. Do you know anyone who was born on this earth and has not died? And no matter how wise, wealthy, powerful, or beloved a person may be, their life must come to an end. And this is true for all living beings. And despite all scientific and medical progress, no one has found a cure for death. And no one ever will. Now think of people you know you have already died. Yeah? And think of the people you know who are still alive. Remember that each of them will die one day, and so will you. There are currently several billion people on the planet, but in 100 years, all of them, except a very few ones who are very young now, will be gone. Yeah. All of those people, you yourself will be dead. Try to feel this fact with your whole being. While being so kind of you, when you need, open your eyes, move your body, give yourself a hug. Second, your lifespan is continuously decreasing. Time never stands still, it passes without interruption. Seconds become minutes, minutes become hours, hours become days. Days become weeks, weeks become months, months become years. As time passes in this way, you move closer and closer to death. Imagine an hourglass in which sand flows downward. Your lifespan is like those grains of sand, constantly falling. Become aware of this continuous flow of time that carries you toward the end of your life. Notice what thoughts, what emotions arise. Knowing that all people living now, almost all people, will be dead in 100 years. Knowing that the train that travels at a constant speed towards your death is never slowing down, never stopping, and there's no possibility to get off. Third contemplation. The time we have for spiritual practice is very limited. Yeah, what do you do to prepare for death? It's said the best preparation for death is our spiritual practice. How much time do you actually devote to spiritual practice? Devote to reducing negative states such as anger and attachment, and developing positive states such as kindness, wisdom, compassion, love. Yeah, how much time do you give to that in your life? How much time do you consciously spend improving your state of mind or caring for it, holding it, or doing beneficial things like helping others or meditating, spending time in silence? Yeah, time without distraction. Make this calculation honestly, like how much time do you spend for the good? That will be meaningful for you at the moment of death. And perhaps in the next life, if you believe in that. How much time do you work every day? Do you spend preparing food? Spend feeling angry, irritated, jealous, lazy, sleeping? How much time do you meditate? How much time do you care, help, support? Spend in gratitude. Yeah. And just being aware what emotions arise, what sensations are there, and being kind to yourself, just being so kind to yourself. It's just what's showing up at this very moment. Yeah. You could move your hands along your body, or move your hand in the space around you. It's okay like that. What if it's just okay like that for now? So these three points may give rise to the determination to use and live your life wisely and attentively. The second part of the three parts in this nine contemplation of death is the uncertainty of the time of death. Yeah. So the first one is we can't avoid death, it's definitely happening. The second, the uncertainty of the time of death. So the uncertainty of when we will die, yeah, this is true. The life expectancy expectancy of humans is uncertain. This is the fourth contemplation. If humans died at a fixed age, say 80 or 90, we would have plenty of time and space to prepare for death. But no such certainty exists. Death surprises most of us. Yeah. And our life can end at every moment. It does at birth for some, in childhood, in teenager age, with 22, with 35, 50, 94, 98. We don't know. So reflect on people you know or you have heard of who died before reaching the age you are now. Being young and healthy is no guarantee of a long life. Children sometimes die before their parents. Healthy people may die before those suffering from incurable diseases. Yeah, we may hope to live to 70 or to 80, but in fact, we don't know. We cannot be sure. We cannot even be sure that we will not die this very evening or tomorrow. Yeah. And it's difficult to truly feel that death can happen at any moment. Yeah. We will tend to believe that life will continue simply because it has continued until now. But every day, thousands of people die, and few of them expected it. Yeah, sink into a strong sense of the complete uncertainty of your own time of death. Feel that there's absolutely no guarantee that you will live long, that you will live tomorrow. The fifth contemplation. There are many causes of death. Yeah. There are countless ways in which people die. Some deaths occur to external causes like natural disasters such as earthquakes, floods, accidents such as car crashes or plane crashes. People can also be killed by other people, or by dangerous animals or insects. Yeah. And death can also arise from internal causes. Yeah. There are hundreds of diseases that can take our health and lead to death. And some people die even though they are not ill. Their body simply stops functioning. And this happens in all ages. And even things that normally sustain life can become causes of death. Yeah. Food, for example, helps us. Yeah, it sustains us, but contaminated food or overeating can kill. Yeah, and medicine is meant to preserve life, but the wrong medicine or the wrong dose can cause death. Houses, yeah, our houses, they provide safety and comfort, yet sometimes they catch fire or collapse and kill the people inside. So think of people you know or have heard of who have died and consider how they died. Yeah. And be aware that any of these things could happen to you. Maybe sensing to where you can release some tension of your body. Let go of your shoulders, your forehead. The jaw can maybe relax a bit. 5% more, maybe, is enough. So, the sixth contemplation, the human body is very fragile. Extremely vulnerable. It can easily be harmed or killed by illness. Within minutes or even a single moment, your body can shift from strong and powerful to helpless and weak. Yeah, within minutes. Right now, you may feel healthy, energetic, and safe, but something as small as a virus or as insignificant as a thorn could kill you. Yeah, and remember times when your body was unwell, injured, or sick, and how easily this can happen again and could even lead to death. Yeah. Your body will not last forever. You may avoid illness and accidents for many years, but eventually your body will going to die, will finally die, lose vitality, beauty, and will finally die. So meditating on these points can develop in us a determination to begin practicing now, yeah, because the future is so uncertain. So the last three parts have the topic, the fact that only spiritual practice can help at the end of our lives, at the time of death. Yeah. Only spiritual practice can help at the time of death. And it does not matter how much we have acquired or built during our lives, like family wealth, power, travel experiences, yeah, all the great things we have done in our life. None of it matters at the moment of death, yeah. And it is said that our mind carries the imprints of everything we have thought, felt, said, and done in this life. Yeah, and it's said that our dying will be more peaceful if we have many positive imprints that bring calm and ease. So we want to be at peace with ourselves and with others and to feel good about the way we have lived, yeah. And the only thing which can truly benefit us at the time of death are positive mental states, such as letting go, non-attachment, acceptance of change, loving kindness, compassion, patience, wisdom. Yeah, this is what really supports us. And if we are not familiar with these states of mind during our life, it's unlikely that we touch on them during our death. It's really helpful to be familiar with those states during our life. And if we understand that, we gain motivation, energy to begin practicing. Practicing a practice which helps you to awake to qualities like compassion and friendliness and care, patience, non-attachment. So you could develop a vivid sense of this reality by imagining yourself at the moment of death. And the seventh contemplation is your loved ones cannot help. Yeah. So facing our last moments, our last breath in this life, whether it is on the deathbed or if the airplane you are in was about to crash, yeah. The thoughts which come up in us are most likely to be around our loved ones, yeah. That's where our strongest attachments go, to our friends and family. So you would probably think of them and feel a strong desire to be with them. But even though they were physically present, could they help you? Even though they don't want you to die, they cannot stop it. And they might not know what to say or to do to comfort you. Instead, they might be overwhelmed by sadness and fear. And their emotions may stir the same emotions in you. When we die, we go alone. Yeah. No one, not even the closest beloved person, can be with us. Yeah. And it might be that if we cannot accept this and loosen our attachment to our loved ones, our mind will be agitated and making a peaceful death very difficult. Might be. So you could recognize the attachment you have to your family and friends. And can you see that this might be an obstacle to a peaceful state of mind at the time of death? So therefore, it is helpful to work on softening this attachment, learning to let go. Take a deep breath, yeah. Make sure you really hear what supports you in being fully here. Yeah. The eighth contemplation, your possessions cannot help. Yeah. Family and friends cannot help. No one can help you, and your possessions cannot help. Yeah. Can any of the things you have accumulated give you comfort or peace at the time of death? Yeah, maybe your wealth may provide you a private hospital room and the best medical care, but that is all it can do. Yeah. You can't even take a single coin or a piece of clothing with you. Nothing. Not even can your possessions not help you, but in fact, your mind may become entangled in concerns about them. Yeah. Who will inherit it, what, and whether there's taking proper care of your things. So, can you see how supportive it can be to be less dependent on material things, less attached to them? To release greed and the desire to possess. And the ninth contemplation, your own body cannot help. Your body has been your constant companion since birth. You have cared for it, worried about it, kept it healthy, fed it, cleaned it, and experienced countless pleasures and pains through it. Your most treasured possession. But when you die, you must leave it behind. It will become weak and eventually useless. It will be taken to a cemetery or crematorium. Yeah. Reflect on the strong sense of dependence and attachment you have around your body and recognize that it cannot help you. It cannot help you in any ways when death arises. All this can help us to see how essential it is to care for our mind. Yeah. Because it is this mind that will be with us in the dying process. And if you believe in rebirth, may continue into the next life. May we all care about our body, mind, heart. May we all understand death as the great teacher of letting go. At the end, we let all go. May all beings wake up to the depth of what it is to be a human being. Thank you, friends, for this practice. I know it's a lot to take in. Really go gentle with you when you maybe open your eyes again, start moving. Yeah. Maybe you're searching for answers now. And what about trusting that it all falls into the right place at the right moment? So it's already now almost a quarter past nine, because we really need time for this contemplation, yeah. And as you might feel, we could have spent much, much longer with it. And I will post in the chat also a link where you can look up these contemplations. They might be a bit different than what like my words were now, but basically the same. And you could then yeah, go with it for you at home. So for those interested in exploring this meditation further or the teachings further, I put some links here for you. The last one is the channel ground meditation, which is a meditation I recorded on YouTube. It's actually a meditation, it's part of the Satipatthana Sutra. I think it's the very last part of the contemplations of the mindfulness of the body. And it's rarely found anywhere. So you might want to do that at home. Again, you need to really take care of you, look for your nervous system when you do it. But I also, yeah, guide you through that. So I really can recommend that meditation. Also, all the books I put here and the sutras you might want to look in. So I see there's a hand. I will give you take you in a moment. Thank you. Just a few words, let me say, about Dana. George mentioned Dana at the beginning of our meeting here, and I just want to emphasize how grateful I am for this Dharma and meditation platform. I'm so grateful for Sangha Life offering these teachings every day. It's almost every day in the year you can come here. And if they have these amazing teachings, and everyone can join, you don't, it's running since years and years, and you don't have to put money in it. But if not enough people put money in it, it can't exist anymore. And from what I understand, from hearing things here and there in the last weeks, is that financially it's quite hard. And I'm working on a new website. And having an automatic booking system in it and having this and that extra, I see how much cost there are. So these p teachings are offered freely, but they are not free of cost. There are quite some costs involved. And I won't see who donates tonight, but I thank you in advance if you donate. It's really, really, really grateful, appreciated, and grateful taking because Sangha Life shares. What you donate tonight shares with me, is shared with me. So thank you for that. So I will take Bartek. So please, you can unmute yourself and might have a question, right?
Hello, hello, Sangalai. Hello, Irma. Nice to meet you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. Yeah, I will kick this off with an easy question. Are you afraid of dying?
Are you asking me if I'm afraid of dying? Is this your question? Is this
Doesn't
your
start.
question?
It doesn't start. I've got a few questions, but this is just a start, and then I'll kind of
Thank you.
unfold
Thank
the question.
you. Sometimes I am, yes. I was reading in the chat also one comment that a person one person said, I'm not afraid of death, but I'm afraid of the dying process. So if my mind goes crazy for a moment, and I might imagine a struggle and physical pain in a dying process, then it can occur some fear in me. That's and then like what I do is I really dive into this space or into the heart, which can be with everything. And I really train this muscle, the muscle of equanimity. Like I feel every time in my meditation practice, I sit there and allow pain and allow heavy duty emotions and allow tickling and this itching and wanting to move and not move, but giving space to what is there. I feel like I'm preparing for death, and that really gives me most of the time a very strong sense of, oh, there's a heart which is ready for everything. Thank you for your question. You want to go on? You had more questions, you said, right?
Yeah, that's what the first part. So the second one will be regarding those practices. This, having a good life and those practices, is that enough, for that fear, and not being afraid of the process? Is that'll be sufficient, do you think? Those contemplations that we just did on the 90.
I don't think it's a, I don't think it's about not having fear, as I think that our practice is not about not having grief or anger, or jealousy or envy or all this stuff which can like make our emotions very hot, I would say. But it's about love in sense of caring, being able to hold what is there. And I think this practice is enough for it. Yeah. And as the Buddha said, living like an ethical towards ethical or with ethical guidelines, like living from our deepest values, like is really supporting our sleep, is supporting our capacity to be with, because we're not building up guilt and stories and anxiety about something we have done wrong, because we are doing our best. And in this, on this path, we are making mistakes. And forgiveness is a big thing if we practice with the nine contemplations, or if we practice with the awareness of death, right? Because we all have maybe done stuff in our life and have stories in our life where we would have loved to act differently than we did. And so this is part of the practice. Is this answering your question?
Yeah, absolutely. That's right. And from my understanding, the process of the dying is comparable. I don't know. I never died. Of course, we never, nobody did. It'll be similar to the process of falling asleep or a deep meditation when we're letting go of the senses, right? And slowly our conscious, letting go of this body and, traveling somewhere else. I would compare this to probably to these experiences. So it's nothing scary, right? It's very, very organic, it's natural, just like the birth, like we are born, it's something, that's it's happening, and it's nothing to be afraid of. And this actually calms me down when I think about it, this is just a natural process for, for this body and spirit. That's what is happening. Would you agree
It
to
sounds like a good space to enter, like the space of trust there, of trusting. And I think even in meditation, even when things are falling away, and you might have had this experience in meditation that everything becomes really, really still or really spacious and wide and open. And then there might be coming fear because what's left when everything falls apart? What's left, you know? And then it's about, okay, can I stay with it? When what if when I stay? And then our mind kicks in, so we don't know how it will be at the end of our life. But I'm sure we can use a lot what we practice, like use a lot from our practice. Yeah.
Sure, your mind body practice will help a lot, you know, with that as well. So thank you for that. And that
Yeah.
answer now.
Thank you so much for your question. I really appreciate it. Thank you. So, Lawrence, you're Lawrence. You have a question?
I'd like to share my experience and then get any feedback you'd like to give.
Please.
It's sort of when you talked about sort of what I would say is sort of like the relationship to what borders on mudita, like how to be there with a person dying, or how the people there with me might be not there, able to be there for me, but be there with their own emotion. Sort of how can you train those people? And how can I train myself to be able to? So I started looking at you. You have very lovely, youthful skin. And I started thinking about your death. And I got so sad, you know, that you might be in pain, that you're gonna die. It became very real. You're gonna die. You're very youthful looking. You're healthy looking. You're gonna die. And so I realized the somatic work that I need to do, because it's just, you know, to sit with someone who looks perfectly healthy and just think, she's gonna die. She's being wise. You're being wise and loving and look healthy, and you're gonna die. Maybe painfully. Hopefully not, but maybe.
Thank
Anyway,
Thank you.
that's what came up for me.
Thank you very much for sharing it. It's really precious, also precious for me to hear your process with it. This question, like, how can I train the people who are around me when I'm dying, like, or around other persons, is a question I get really often when I'm teaching the nine contemplations of death or teach around this subject. And you know, it really depends on your relationship you have with these people, like who is it and how close you are to them. So there are people you might have a good relationship with, yeah, in your family, and you might think there's a big chance that they might be with you during your dying process, and you could talk to them in advance and ask them like what you wish from them, and also tell them about the teachings, about what you gain from these teachings and what you think it's beneficial. And like from my teenager kids, they are absolutely not interested in meditation, but they grew up with those wisdom teachings still. So I hope they might remember breathing. They might remember, oh, there is more space around the body, because that's what I taught them all my life. Like when they're in pain, okay, what else is there? Where there is no pain. So, but a lot of the time, and a lot of the time, I think, we can't change others anyway. We can't, you know, and we are not in control, like who will be with us around death. So it's so precious to really sink into our own clarity and our own stillness. And when we are like breathing calmly, when we are at peace, it transfers into the room, it transfers into the space. And you also, when you will be with a dying person and you're committed to your practice, you had to ha have practice, even though now all the sadness came up when you looked at me and thinking, oh, Nirmala is going to die one day. There's also this practice you have done, and this practice will come forward, you know, our sense of being with the heart, which is ready for everything, will be there in difficult moments. I really trust that, and I had made this experience. Yeah, is this good enough as an answer for you?
Thank you so very much. May you be healthy and happy
You
and
too.
have a long life.
Thank you, Patrice. Oh my God, so many questions. I don't know. George, can we do 5 minutes longer, or is this kind of a no-go? Maybe you can say something.
I'll probably be very quick.
For me, it's okay if people are willing to stay with me. I can stay. Sorry, I interrupted you, Patrice.
No, it's okay. Yeah, your answer was necessary. Thank you. So what I wanted to share, this came to mind when you were talking about eating, overeating, and so forth, as being, you know, potentially unhealthy and possible causes of death. I brought to mind my own aunt who died several years ago now, but she had had a stroke. She had been she was 93. She had been living independently in her own home and ended up having to move first to an assisted living situation, and then later on she just did not recover to the point where it was deemed that she was able to stay to take care of herself, and she went into a nursing home. And she had been in a situation with her best friend from kindergarten, who she knew her whole life, and experienced the nursing home situation with that person. And so she made the decision herself to stop eating. So she essentially starved to death of her own volition. So I think that's another situation with eating that you might want to include in your what you're talking about there.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank
It's
you.
yeah, it's I was and in this teachings today was quite going really with the tradition. Yeah, like if you know my teachings, they're quite wild. But today I was really stuck in. But yeah, but thank you for mentioning it. Yeah,
Yeah,
that's
thank you.
Joanna. Johanna, you want to unmute yourself?
Yes. Do you hear me?
Yes, I can. Hi.
Oh, fine. That's fine. Yeah, I wrote it already, but I thought then I might say it again. Yeah, I noticed that the problem for me is actually not dying, but the living. I think. Well, I had an illness. I could have died from it, and then when I realized it, I noticed. When I realized that I could die, then I noticed such a peaceful feeling, and I really liked it. But then I noticed, oh, I won't die from it, so I will have to live. And this is the harder, actually, the much harder way for me to have to live still.
Yeah.
You can relate to that, or is it strange?
I don't think it's
Yeah,
strange.
it would be interesting. I would be interested in this.
You're not the only one. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, thank you very much for sharing it. I mean, life is difficult for a lot of us, you know, and our mind has the tendency to go with what is hard or difficult or narrow or not good enough. And it's really a retraining of the mind to go to what is good. So if you had this sense of, oh, I could die from it, and having a sense of what death could be, like, and I imagine there was something like peaceful around or calm or like relaxing. Yeah, and then feeling the sensation, allow yourself to be with it. There's nothing wrong with allowing it to be How does it feel in your body if you relate to that, you know? And how long can you stay with the beauty of it, with the relaxation of it, with the nourishing, with the calm, with the peace, whatever you find there, but really allow yourself to go to this space would be like one approach. I really have to that. And I worked with people like this also in the one-to-one guidance I'm doing, like and from there something new will come. So your cells will make an experience of peace and calm and freedom and see how you relate to life afterwards. If you do it, you know, occasionally, often enough, with guidance maybe, because the narrow and the clinging stuff will come back, and the pain and the our life is not, you know, how I wanted it. It's hard. Death would be easier. Okay, so what is there when you think about death, when you feel death in your cells now, today? So something you want to try, maybe. How is that, Johann?
That's interesting.
Yeah, because there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah.
But it sounds also a bit like, I don't know, maybe liking death too much, then, you know, we should live, shouldn't we?
Yeah, but if you enter a state of peace and calm and maybe joy, you know, it's fully vibrant, it's fully alive. If you really feel it with your body, the danger there is to kind of separate yourself from it, to just go into dissociation. But you know, if you're really diving aware into, okay, how does that feel, this wish to die? Like if you have a picture there of your body, and then allowing the nourishment to be there, and just go with it, because this is something positive for you. It's the same as if looking at the trees and the sun behind the trees is something, I want to go there. That is so beautiful, and I want to feel it. And then often we don't feel it. We just crave for it, or we say, oh, look, there's a rainbow. Oh, look, there's a sunset. And we don't allow ourselves to really feel it. But how would it be? The life comes back, no worries, you know. All the stuff, the pain and the difficulties will come back. But what about allowing space, creating space for positive sensations or for nourishment sensations? Yeah. And I've been guided through that several times, so I really know what I'm talking about. But you need to be really attentive that you don't dissociate with it, or that you like that you're really there with it. And maybe you find a person who can do this once with you together, and then it will become a good practice for you. Thank you
Okay,
for
thanks.
your question. So, Kami, we do your question. Jane, haven't I seen you? Jane, you want to go first? You're waving in the. Sorry, so we take Jane.
Okay. Thank you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yes.
This is not so much a question. I just want to mention I'm in Canada, and we have something called MAID, which is medically assisted death. And I've been part of a women's group, and we're all older. And two people have chosen this because what they had was so painful, and no possibility of a normal life, whatever I mean by a normal life, but in having any kind of comfortable or life, that they have chosen MAID. Both of them had things very, very, very difficult. What does, or Buddhism, or I mean, maybe you don't know what everybody feels about it, but what's your reaction to medically assisted death?
My reaction I can feel immediately is I don't know. I feel like some narrowness in my chest, and I feel a space around the body with I don't know. Who am I? Who am I to judge? Who am I to talk about how death and dying is going to be, either with medicine or without medicine? And I also feel a deep appreciation for other people's choices if they choose something like this. I or appreciate respect would be a better word, yeah. And
Yeah.
I don't feel like I have a view about that, yeah.
It's quite difficult to get it. You have to have two doctors, checking out that really your life is unbearable at that point.
Yeah, I couldn't. I don't know how it is because I haven't been in this situation really, and I do have respect, yeah,
Thank you.
for the living and dying of other people. Yeah.
Yeah, and I have to say, I really thought this was an important session, and I'm glad I could get it. It's morning for me in Canada, so that was good. It's the first
Thank you
time
for
I can
joining. Yeah.
get on one that's actually live because the time is good. Thank you.
Okay, Jane, quickly. I'm really feeling already bad
Thank
about
you. I'm so sorry.
last question.
I just wanted to share. I faced my mortality when I was very young, and I must say, I've lived your life of being at peace with dying, but it has had a huge impact on how I live. And I just am so grateful to be alive, and every moment is a gift. And I just wanted to share that. I wanted to share what just recently happened, which I find very interesting. And I wish I'm going to have my mother listen to your talk. She's 94 years old. I faced major surgery. I had a quadruple bypass surgery to my heart this past year. And I was very much at peace with the possibility of not making it through. And my mother was not. And I really just wish she could have been more at peace with it's part of life. And I've had a good life and I want to keep living, but if it's my time, it's my time. And I was very, very comfortable with that, which helped me really heal through the process because I wasn't at war with whatever needed to happen. So I just wanted to share that. It's hard when other people we love are not at peace and struggling to let go.
It is
And
hard. And what about if we can allow their pain to be their pain, as we can allow our stuff, which is going on for us, to be our stuff, you
that's what I told her. This is your drama, Ma. I'm not involved. And I'm sorry that you're hurting. Thank
I need to close the session. We are
you.
over. If you have questions, please contact me. I put